and welcome to episode 44 of this little podcast we call Two Chairs Talking. My name is Perry Middlemas, and I'm here with my many-lettered friend, David Grigg. Hi, David. How are you?
Not too bad at all. Many-lettered, that's a very good phrase, because I've been working on this huge project, which is nothing but letters, but we'll talk about that in the next episode, I think.
Oh, yes, that's all right. That ginormous thing that you're talking about is just letters backwards and forwards.
Yes, it's...
There's a particular name for that. Is it a...
Epistolary?
Epistolary, letter novel? Yes. We better get the pronunciation right for this
thing. Epistolary, I think.
Now, this is a bit of a strange episode this week, David, because we're backing up a week after our last one. It's almost as previously on Two Chairs Talking. Previously on Two Chairs Talking, we were talking about our best books of the year. And today we're going to finish off because we didn't quite get to the end of it last time. And then we're going to move on to our best TV and film. Anything else happening in the real world for you, David, at the moment?
Things happening. Apparently there's some sort of event happening in America where there's been a bit of a go to having a coup, but never mind. It doesn't even have worked so far anyway. So
no, well, yeah, that may still happen. I believe there's a few eruptions going on in and around the inauguration, which will be happening in a couple of days. So
That's right. So we keep our fingers crossed that all that will go well.
We do. We wish our friends in the US all the best. We hope you get through this. And we hope that we actually do move into a time of where things are a little bit better all over, regardless of where you lie politically. You don't want to see violence on the streets anywhere.
That's true.
And we just basically want things to move peacefully along, as we should theoretically in a democracy. But maybe what we should have a look at is political dystopias sometime in the future. David, track down about half a dozen SF books and look through those.
Yes, certainly it could be a topic. It could be a topic.
Might be a bit of a topic. But let's get back to what we were talking about previously, finishing off what we didn't finish last week.
Yeah.
And that is our best books of the year. So do you want to go through your top 10 books for 2020?
Yeah, I'll do that. So obviously, in the last episode, I talked in much more detail about all of these because they wouldn't be on my top 10 list if they hadn't been in my top 5 somewhere else, I don't think. So starting from number 10 and counting up, number 10 on my list was A Canticle for Leibowitz by Walter M. Miller Jr. I talked about that a lot in the podcast, so I won't mention it again. Number 9 was The Sunken Land Begins to Rise Again by M. John Harrison. This is a very, very interesting book. I'm actually reading it for the second time, Perry. When I get a book like this, which really makes me think, I've really got to, and if I'm going to be writing about it or talking about it on the podcast, I really like to read it more than once. And so I'm actually halfway through the second read of this. Very interesting book, very, very odd in some ways, but I've got no idea what's going on. Really, even on a second reading, but at the same time, it's intriguing, so it's well worth a look at.
That wouldn't augur well normally, but okay, I'll bear with you. Yeah, all right.
Oh no, it's good. It's very well. It's good stuff. Okay, number 8 on my list is Solaris by Stanislav Lem. Again, I won't talk about that much because we've talked about it quite a bit on the podcast. We had a special episode talking about Solaris and Roadside Picnic. And the films based on those. Number 7 on my list is How Much of These Hills is Gold by C. Pam Zhang. This is the novel set in the sort of gold rush era in California, but focusing on two young Chinese children who are orphaned and how they manage to survive after that. Very good, well worth reading. Number 6 on my list is The Mirror and the Light, which is the concluding book of the trilogy by Hilary Mantel about Thomas Cromwell. Fascinating stuff. Very interesting the way it's written too. It's not written from the first person point of view, but it's written in the third person, but almost as though it was the first person. It's quite odd in some ways. But it's intriguing because you're always in Thomas Cromwell's head. Which he eventually loses, of course, which is the end of the series. Number 5 on my list is Truth by Peter Temple. Really, really good crime novel by an Australian writer who's sadly no longer with us, but this is the book of his that won the Miles Franklin Award. So it's very, very good. Number four on my list is Piranesi by Susanna Clarke. Again, talked a lot about this on the podcast. You might be surprised to find it's only number four on my list, but that's where it is. Number three on my list is We Have Always Lived in the Castle by Shirley Jackson, which is a really, really interesting book. Short book. Talked about it a little bit on the podcast, not in any detail. I might do a bit on the podcast about Shirley Jackson, because I've just read my second book by her, which is called The Haunting of Hill House. Both very intriguing books, and they've generally been mischaracterized, I think, in the impression that people have of them. They're not horror novels or ghost stories, as you might think. Anyway, interesting. I'd like to talk. She's my real discovery, I think, of 2020, is Shirley Jackson. I've got to go back and read some of her short stories too. Number two on my list was Normal People by Sally Rooney, the Irish writer, which I really enjoyed, about the relationship between these two young people in Ireland. And number one on my list is not a fiction book at all. It's a non-fiction book. It's number one on my list was Demon Voices by Philip Pullman, which is just a collection of essays. But in terms of the books I've enjoyed during the year, this is the book I enjoyed the most during the year. And it's a book I'll go back to again and again. And it doesn't harm for the fact that the actual physical book itself, the hardback, is a beautiful, beautiful piece of bookmaking. Lovely book. I do have a couple of honourable mentions for the whole year. The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. Great to read that again. Gone by Midnight by Candice Fox. And What the Wind Brings by Matthew Hughes. And it's interesting that none of the science fiction books that I read for the first time in 2020 made it into my top 10 list, or even into the honourable mentions. So it probably says something about my current tastes in SF, or my shifting tastes in SF. But anyway, so yeah. And Shirley Jackson was the big find for me this year in terms of new authors that I've discovered. So that's my list.
Okay, interesting. Yes, well, we might have to concentrate on Shirley Jackson at some time in the future. Mm. My top 10. At number 10, The Women in Black by Madeleine St. John, or St. John, if you want to pronounce it in that way. I'm not sure how she actually did pronounce it. This is the Australian novel set in Sydney in the late 50s, early 60s in a women's department store. Beautifully written novel and a debut. So she had a lot of talent. Number nine was one that I haven't mentioned in last week's episode at all, because it didn't really fit properly as I wanted to put it into any mm-hmm. of them. And that's Tango Briefing by Adam Hall. This is one of the Quiller novels that I mentioned way back as one of my all-time favourite novels. And I reread it this year and still thought it was pretty damn good. Number eight, Waystation by Clifford D. Simic. Yeah. We discussed that in great detail. Won the Hugo Award in the year that it was eligible. Number seven, The Man in the High Castle by Philip K. Dick. Yes, listener, we did actually read a lot of books together over the year, especially for the Hugos, and this is one of them. Number six, A Month in the Country by J.L. Carr. Short novel set in just after the First World War, but written in the 1970s. Beautifully written novel about a man getting over post-traumatic stress disorder after the First World War, otherwise known as shell shock, wonderful stuff. Number five, Infinite Detail by Tim Maughan. This was one that I looked at, and I actually was just discussing this with somebody the other night, that I reckon if I was to go and give it a rating now, it wouldn't be as high as the 4.7 I've given it. Odd that, you know, that immediately afterwards you'll read a book and you think, yep, got to give it that rating, so you do. And later on you look back and you go, what?
Yeah.
Why was that as high as it was? Anyway, maybe that's me just trying to adapt my rating
system. I do that a bit with Goodreads. Sometimes I give a book a 5-star rating as soon as I finished it. I give it a 5-star rating and then I think, oh, no, and go back.
Oh, what, a month or so later you go back, or even a week you go back and later and change it down to a 4. Yeah, yeah, that's fair enough. Number four, A Canticle for Leibowitz by Walter M. Miller Jr. We basically agreed that one was pretty high up on the list. Number three, The Ministry of the Future by Kim Stanley Robinson. This is one that I'm going to have to discuss with a few people in a big way, because it's a big monster of a book and probably, in my view, the best of the science fiction stuff that I read out of 2020. And that's not a lot, but even so, it's still way up there. And the next two, number two, The Left Hand of Darkness by Ursula K. Le Guin. Probably my favourite SF novel of all time, and as I mentioned last week, the feel was not the same after it had been published, and there are probably about a handful of books in the field that you could say that for. Neuromancer, whether you like it or not, the feel changed after that. Dune, possibly, and a couple of others, but we won't go into those. And my all-time favourite from last year was The French Lieutenant's Woman by John Fowles, which is a real cheat because it's my all-time favourite novel all the way forever. Mm. And so basically in that case, if you read it in a year, it's always got to come back up. And it held good, which I was very happy about, because as I said at the time, you're always worried about rereading in case it suddenly... Yes, starts to go a little bit funny and you don't like it anymore, which is what we're not looking for.
No.
Honourable mentions, The Rain Heron by Robbie Arnott. Mm-hmm. That's second novel by an Australian author, which is good. The 10,000 Doors of January by Alex E. Harrow, which is one of the Hugo-nominated novels last year, which I really like.
Yep.
Voices by Ursula K. Le Guin. So Le Guin gets two on this whole list, if you like. She's the only one that does that. Mm-hmm. And the last one was A Memory Called Empire, the Hugo winner by R. Katie Martin,
yeah,
which is one that I also liked very much. And I'm looking forward to the sequel, which is coming out shortly.
That's interesting that quite a few of your books were rereads then this year.
Yes, it was. It was same as you. There's a lot there that were rereads. You know what you're... You sort of know what you're going to get, but it is, as I said, a little bit daunting when you go back and reread them.
Yeah.
And you love them so much the first time around, you're worried that is not going to come up.
Yeah.
Others have jumped way up on my estimation, some that have gone down, but these ones have, The Left Hand of Darkness and French Lieutenant's Woman, have basically stayed at that level, which I'm very grateful for.
Yeah.
So there we are. That's our best books read during 2020.
Very good.
Hopefully we'll be able to get a couple of our correspondents and interrogate them over what they read. We're trying to set up a couple of those interviews, but people are a little bit busy at this time of year, either sort of charging around everywhere or on holiday, not overseas, and mostly not interstate, because at the moment we can't go anywhere.
Well, that's right.
So we're just cruising around Victoria, but there we are. So now we move, David, ever onwards,
yep,
to our best film and television of the year. So shall we start with film?
Yes, we can do that.
How did you go this year?
The thing about me is I watch very little in the way of movies and TV, so it's going to be pretty brief for me this time around. So I did sort of come up with a top 10 list, but I thought I might mention also a couple of movies I saw which I didn't think were all that great, but I'll mention them just to fill in some of my space here. So I made a top five list of movies, and a lot of these were things that all but one of these were movies that we saw for the needs of the podcast that we were going to be discussing on the podcast. So it shows you how little I watch other than that. So number five on my list was Time Bandits, a Terry Gilliam film, which we talked about in the Gilliam episode. Number four on my list was Yesterday, which I did talk about on the podcast a fair bit. This is the one where it's a sort of slight alternate history or something, alternate world where this chap ends up in a modern world where the Beatles never existed, but he remembers all their songs and is able to play them and sort of makes a huge splash in the pop music industry. But it's a very funny and very, very, very nice film. Number three on my list is Solaris, as directed by Tarkovsky. Not the one which has got George Clooney in it. The Steven Soderbergh one, that is not. That would be down on the quite a long way down on my list. Number two on my list is 12 Monkeys, another Gilliam film with Bruce Willis and Brad Pitt in sort of featuring in it. Very good film. Time travel story, very cleverly done. Very nicely done film. And number one on my list is yet another Gilliam film, which is Brazil, which we watched again for the probably third or fourth time this year in order to talk about on the podcast. But another great film with Jonathan Pryce is in that one. So that's my list of movies, Perry. But beyond that, I did say I was going to mention a couple of clunkers. I thought, well, not clunkers, but ones I didn't think were all that good that I did see during the year because I see so little. But a couple of the ones I saw were On the Rocks, which is on the Apple TV Plus service. Now, this is a Bill Murray vehicle, really. It has Bill Murray, Rashida Jones, and it's directed by Sofia Coppola. This is a fairly amusing but generally forgettable movie, which features Bill Murray as Felix, who is the aging philanderer, father of Laura, who's played by Rashida Jones. She is having suspicions about the fidelity of her husband, who has to travel often for business. And Felix feeds these suspicions, really, applying his own view of male behavior to Dean. And he and Laura carry on their own private investigation to try and find evidence of Dean's misbehavior. It was okay, but it certainly wasn't up to the standard of Coppola's Lost in Translation with Murray, which is a much more interesting film. The other one I saw recently was Greyhound, which is the Tom Hanks movie that got bought by Apple TV. There was, because of the lack of theatrical releases and so on due to the virus, the film was bought up by Apple TV and shown on their channel, which was okay. This is a Second World War movie about the convoys in conflict with the U-boats that live sort of sending convoys of supplies from the United States to England, which was really one thing which kept Britain going during the Second World War. But they were attacked terribly by the German U-boats, and many, many tons of shipping were sunk, and of course lots and lots of lives, many, many lives were lost. So it's an interesting enough sort of film, but it didn't really appeal to me much as being deep and meaningful. It was okay. Anyway, those are my not quite clunkers, but ones which could have been on my list but weren't because I didn't think they were good enough. So that's it.
Film for me, as I suppose it was for you in 2020, was basically In the Home. I can't recall a single film I went to see in the cinema. We've got cinemas opening up in Melbourne now, so hopefully shortly, maybe even today, I may be off to a film, which will be good. But I watched only 13 that I could remember or had noted down from last year. But I've got six of them listed here, five, well, my top five and one honourable mention. So I'll start with the top five. My number five was Brazil, same as you, that basically watched it for the Terry Gilliam episode of the podcast during the year. Yep, enjoyed it. Deeply weird. Certainly Terry Gilliam-esque. I don't think anybody else could have made a film just like that. Number four, Sometimes, Always, Never. This is a Bill Nighy comedy drama about a man pining for his lost son. I can't remember if I discussed this on the show at all. It's certainly an interesting and well-made film. Sort of a dark comedy because the son has gone missing and we don't know whether he is dead or has just left home. But Bill Nighy is sort of basically pining for him the whole time, always looking out for him. And it takes the actions of his other son, the remaining son in the family, to try and heal the family and try to bring everybody back in together again. And it's really beautifully well done, and I really enjoyed it. And my wife's a big Bill Nighy fan, and whenever I find something, she's, oh, yeah, I want to watch that. Even if it's no good, we watch it. Even if the reviews are crap, we still watch
Love
it.
Actually, can I mention the words Love Actually?
Well, we saw that. Well, actually, he's not bad. He's actually a real comedy actor. You can strip all the rest of it away, and there you are. You're left with Bill Nighy. Yeah. You know, that bit's pretty good. Number three, Yesterday, same as you. I watched this again during the year. It was interesting. I read I was checking this up during the week, and I came across a report that Paul McCartney and his missus had slipped into a screening of it at somewhere or other, slipped in the back and sat down the back, and he said he really enjoyed it. Obviously, he hadn't been involved in it. And Yoko Ono is said to have been quite pleased with the portrayal of John Lennon. Mm,
oh, there's a lovely, lovely scene.
Does that give it away? Maybe it gives a bit away.
It does. But isn't that a touching scene in that, though? Where
it is. It's
they discover John Lennon, who wasn't part of the Beatles, because the Beatles didn't exist in this timeline. But you know what he'd done with his life, and the main character sort of says to him, "You're 74 and you're still here. You know, this isn't wonderful, but this is a world in which John Lennon has lived to be 74.
John Lennon looks at him bemusedly as he, "What the hell are you on?" No, that's good.
And it's beautifully played by Robert Carlyle, I think, was the actor. You remember him from Hamish Macbeth?
Oh, yes. Yes, he's been a lot of stuff, yeah. Oh, okay. I hadn't picked that. It was very well made up. Number two, The Old Guard. I think I discussed this. This is based on a comic of the same name. Superhero film featuring a group of semi-immortals. Probably going to be a sequel to that. There is at least one more graphic novel afterwards. I enjoyed it. It's not exactly the same as your other superhero movies. It is reasonably violent, so be aware of that. I mean, it's not as violent as John Wick, for example, but it is reasonably violent. And number one during the year for me was Stalker,
okay,
by Tarkovsky. Believe it or not,
wouldn't be on my list.
No. I know that you and I really differed in terms of the way we thought about this particular story, but. And I have absolutely no doubt, David, the more and more I think about this, I have no doubt that my appreciation of this film was almost totally enhanced by the fact that I was reading Jeff Dyer's book Zona at the same time as I was watching it. And I don't think, if I hadn't read that, I suspect I may not have liked this film at all. It is Russian. It is very, very, very slow. And it only takes one small slice out of the novel. But it's just really interesting. And I don't know whether I'll go back and watch the whole thing again, but I might watch snippets of it a bit and read snippets of the book again at the same time. So anyway. And my honourable mention was Solaris by Tarkovsky, like you. The Soderbergh was, come on. It's just George Clooney trying to do a science fiction film. The story, the word around the traps is that his latest one, The Midnight Sky, is not that good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So maybe best to steer clear of that. Although we might have to watch it and review it for the listener to make sure that they steer clear of it as well.
Okay. Is that a science fiction movie?
Yes, it is. Yes. So it's basically he's a scientist in the Arctic or Antarctic, I think, somewhere, and there is a returning spaceship which he is from that has gone to Mars or somewhere, or maybe even on an interstellar trip. Don't know. Don't care. They're coming back towards Earth, and he's attempting to try to get them to not land on Earth because there's been some cataclysm. Unspecified on the Earth, and he's trying to keep them away to say, no, look, the whole place is just kaput. It's all gone belly up in the last month. You have to basically stay off, otherwise you'll die as well. I'm not going to be here for very long, and I'm just here to warn you. Well, the premise is all right, but I gather that it's just boringly slow.
Oh, dear.
Anyway, there we are. So that's it for film. So moving on to television, David, you watched a whole lot less than I did, so you're going to put all of yours into one lump.
I am indeed. So for reasons I won't go into here, it's quite hard for me to watch a lot of TV, so I don't get to see very little. Anyway, here's my list of five. So number five on my list is For All Mankind, an Apple TV production. I've only seen season one. I think season two is about to come out. Is that right? I don't think it's out as yet. I haven't seen it.
No, I don't think it's out as yet. No. Coming out.
I've seen the trailer. The trailer of season two looks good. But this is the one which has the premise that It's an alternate history with the premise that the Russians landed a man on the moon before the Americans did. And indeed, the Russians land a woman on the moon before the Americans did, which spurs the Americans to start training up women astronauts back in the 60s. Very cleverly done, really interesting characterization. It's just really, really well done. Good production, terrific production. Number four on my list is The Expanse, season four. I'm in the middle of watching season five, but haven't completed watching that. I don't think it's even completely out as yet, is it?
I couldn't tell you.
They're releasing it week by week, I think.
I think so. I haven't actually started. Okay. I think they released the first three episodes in one hit, and then one per week after.
Sure. This is the one which is primarily based on the original book by James A. Corey. I think it's the one called Babylon's Ashes.
Babylon's Ashes, number five.
And which the Earth starts to get bombarded. This is season five. Season four was the one that was set on the planet, mostly set on the surface of the planet, wasn't it? Illus, is it?
Through the Ring.
Yeah, that's right. Which wasn't all that great, I thought. I liked the stuff based in space more than that. Anyway, it was still very good.
Yep.
Number three on my list is season one of His Dark Materials, which is based on the Philip Pullman trilogy. And season one sort of takes us up to the end of the first book in the trilogy, basically. But again, seems to be very well done, very high production values. Some interesting slight twists they've made to it to, I think, actually accommodate some of his second trilogy based on this world, which is called The Book of Dust. And there's a few little things in there which hint at that. Very well done. Looking forward to seeing the second season of that, which I think is out on HBO, Foxtel.
Foxtel has it already.
I haven't had the chance to see it. That's one of the things we have to talk about, is the fact that if you want to watch all this stuff, you've got to sign up to all these different channels, all these different streaming services. And quite frankly, I can't afford to do that. Anyway, so I'll have to dip in and out, you know, get a month's subscription to something and then dip out again. Number two on my list is something I haven't talked about on the podcast at all, I don't think yet, but it's terrific. And that's a series called Upright, starring Tim Minchin and Millie Alcock. I'll get to her in a moment. So this is just I haven't talked about it on the podcast, so I'm going to have a bit of a run at it now. And it's a limited series of eight episodes. It's available through Foxtel, I think, but I don't subscribe to that at the moment. So I actually bought it from Apple iTunes for the whole series. Was only like $13, so it was well worth it. And my wife and I are both big fans of Tim Minchin, so we enjoyed this greatly. So the basic story of this is that Tim Minchin plays this character called Lachlan or Lucky Flynn. And as we encounter him, he's traveling across country from Sydney on his way to Perth. He's got an old piano in a trailer behind his hired car. Anyway, he's not far from Mildura when he pulls out from the side of the road without paying much attention, and he smashes into this ute and crashes and ends up in a ditch, and his car's no longer drivable. Anyway, a furious young woman erupts out of the ute and starts to abuse him. It's very foul language. Anyway, she's actually broken her arm in the crash. And her name, it turns out, is Meg. And when he asks her, she tells him that she's 16. But she shouldn't really even be driving this thing. Anyway, they have this big argument about it, and finally he agrees to drive her in her ute to the Mildura Hospital to get treated. And together they managed, under Meg's directions, to get the piano from his trailer into her ute, and off they go. So the rest of the series is how they end up traveling together all the way to Perth, and it's all their adventures along the way. And as they go, we keep getting revelations from both sides from both these characters, and you find out why Lucky is taking this piano all the way to Perth, and what's making him so anxious about his reception when he gets there. And then Meg has secrets of her own. And the character of young Meg is brilliantly played by this young actor called Millie Alcock. It's a wonderful performance. She's terrific. Anyway, look, I'm probably talking too long about it for this kind of summary episode, but it's a really, really excellent series. And if you get the chance, I recommend it. Some great music in there too, including a really beautiful piece written by Minchin himself called I Will Carry You, which is sung by Missy Higgins. Highly recommend it. So that's my number two. And my number one, which I won't talk about hardly at all because I raved about it on the podcast previously. Number one on my list is Tales from the Loop, which is a mini series. I've talked about it a great deal on one of the episodes of the podcast, so I won't talk about it again, but it's cleverly done science fiction. This rural sort of town somewhere in America where underground there's this scientific experiment going on, and it has weird effects on things above ground. Beautifully done. Beautiful characterization and clever stuff. I liked it a lot. So that's my list. I don't have any honorable mentions because that's probably the entirety of the TV series I watched this year. So there we go.
Okay, well, I was a bit surprised. Terribly surprised when I went down and made the list of everything that I'd seen during 2020. I thought that I hadn't been watching much television at all and realised that I'd watched 34 different titles, if you include each season as a different title. And somewhere in the vicinity of 250 episodes of these titles, which struck me as being very peculiar. Some of them are only half hour, some of them an hour, but I just thought that was weird. I hadn't realised I'd actually watched as much as I had. But there we go. So what I've had to do is I've had to split them all into different categories because there are too many of them. So I won't spend too long on each one, but I'll basically sort of give you a run through because I don't think there's practically none of this stuff that we've spoken about on the podcast. And we really do need to start talking more about what we've been watching, especially now as I realise I've been watching so bloody much of the stuff.
Yes.
That gives us an opportunity to actually talk about it.
Yeah. I'll have to try and catch up, though, is the problem.
Oh, yeah, well, you will. But some of these things are available and around the place and you can watch very easily because some of them end up on free-to-air and we'll get to some of those. The first one I want to watch is food programs. I'm a bit of a fan of food programs. I like watching them. I like cooking. I like seeing what people do with them. I don't give high marks to people that are just sort of sitting there demonstrating. I mean, as much as I might like Nigella Lawson stuff, I'm not going to give that a high rating because she's just showing you how to do something. I'm more interested in people going out and looking at food as a almost as an experience. So my first, I only watched four food programs during the year that I want to basically mention. I don't want to mention all four, I only want to mention the top three. My third one is Chef's Table Barbecue, which is from Netflix. This is 4 1-hour episodes. So here we're only talking 4 1-hour episodes, pretty easy to watch. Concentrates on chefs around the world who use wood fire to achieve their cooking goals. I love cooking over charcoal. It's the best thing you can do. Now, this is a special season of Netflix Chef's Table, and there's been a number of those. They've had about 6 seasons of those. Now, this if you like this, you probably need to like barbecuing if you like this particular thing. And we're not talking about barbecuing, just sort of straight, flat top plate grilling sort of stuff that we do in Australia. This is more hefty, lots of high heat with charcoal and barbecue and then allowing the coals to go down and cooking over that. So fantastic stuff. Number two, Rick Stein's Secret France. I noticed this has only just started on ABC TV, David, so you can watch this. So this is a travel log of Rick Stein driving around France, stopping off in different places, looking at what he calls his secret France. Not really all that secret, but what he's talking about is he's trying to stay away from the big tourist traps, not going to the Michelin restaurants and all that sort of stuff. He wants to get to the smaller, down-home sort of stuff. No, I like Rick Stein. A lot of people don't. My son doesn't. My son thinks he's pretentious, but I like him. And I just think that he's willing to make mistakes. He's willing to just have fun when he does things, and it's good. And plus, it was probably the only opportunity I was going to have a basically food holiday for the whole year by watching him doing it, because it wasn't going to happen with me. And number one, Food Safari Fire. This is SBS TV's Maeve O'Meara's Fire, part of her Food Safari. 10 episodes from 2016. I've got it on DVD and I watched it again. And it covers everything from street food to spit roasting to tandoor to smoking. Not smoking cigarettes, but smoking food over flame and over fire. And she goes around to a whole lot of different people's backyards and see what they do when they home cook. And that's really quite excellent. So that was my food. Crime programs. I watched a lot of these during the year. I do this because my wife's a big fan of crime fiction. And if I'm going to watch something with her, she's not really overly keen on a lot of science fiction. So I have to basically shift that off to one side and try and sneak it around the edges, which is why I probably didn't watch as much of that as I might have during the year. But I did watch a lot of crime programs, 17 in all, as I've got. Number five, Jiri Haji. I think I spoke about this on the podcast. This is from Netflix. It's an 8-episode joint production between Japan and the UK. Starts off with a Japanese businessman being murdered in London, with the knife which is left sticking in his back. Now, this is a standard Yakuza method, a bit like to say the knife stuck in his back, and whoever the knife belonged to gives you the indication of who actually did the murder, and this is a warning, don't do this again. So the Japanese authorities sent a Japanese detective there, and it's what happens when he works out that the person that he's hunting is his estranged brother. So that's interesting. Number four, Des, which is on Stan. Only 3 episodes, so it's a short miniseries about a serial killer in Scotland in the 70s and 80s. Late 70s into early 80s, and played by David Tennant, who's fantastic in the role. Absolutely. And this guy's convicted of killing 6 people, young men. And when asked why he did it, he said, I don't know, just did it. And he said, you're lucky you caught me when we did, because it wouldn't have been 15, it would have been 115. Because he just would have kept on going. And it's masterful stuff. Harrowing. You don't get a lot of detail or a lot of depictions of the murders. So if you're a bit squeamish, that's not a major problem. But just watch it for Tennant's performance.
He's good in everything, really, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he turns up again later on in a minute. He's really getting some, he's got some serious acting chops, this guy. And he's really now started to move into dealing with the villains, and I think that's where he realizes that's where the good stuff is,
Yes.
and he's doing it.
Did you ever see him in Jessica Jones, which is on Netflix?
No, but I know of him in there,
Yeah.
which I should go back and now have a
Yeah,
look at him,
he's
because
very good in that as the villain. Yeah. Horrible
I will
villain.
go back and I will go back and have a look. Number three, The Alienist, season 1. There are 2 seasons to this. Season 2 is not as good in my view, but season 1, the first one's quite good. 10 episodes based on the 1994 novel of the same name by Caleb Carr. This is on Netflix. It's set back in the mid 1890s. An alienist was the name given to psychologists at that time, and he's been brought in to help the police get some insights into a possible serial killer that was hunting young children or young boys on the street. In other words, these days he'd be called a profiler. So it's got excellent set design, good acting, script, and it's got a satisfactory conclusion. It all works out really well. Looks great. Number 2, Trapped. And I've put season 1 and season 2 together. These are 2 seasons of 10 episodes each, Icelandic detective series, set in a town in the north of Iceland that my wife and I drove through in 2019, but didn't realise that was the setting for this, because we hadn't watched it up until that point. But once we started watching, you go, oh, okay, oh, I remember that. Oh, I remember
Okay.
that. Oh, yes, that looks good. Fantastic stuff.
Is that based on the books by Ragnar Jonasson or someone else?
No, but set in the same area. This is not the Dark Iceland stuff. This is different.
Okay.
But from what my wife tells me, those Dark Iceland books are pretty damn good, and I believe you're reading
I've
them.
read
So
one so far, and I've got the others
well, we'll
queued
get an
up.
update of them in a couple of weeks when we talk about crime. But these are really worthwhile watching. They've been on SBS on demand. I'm not sure if they're still there, but anyway, they're around. Wonderful stuff. Yeah, I like them a lot. Number 1, Criminal UK, season 1 and season 2. I'll put these two together again because I gave them both the same score at a very high level on Netflix. This is an anthology series of one-act plays, all using the same set. Season 1 has 3 episodes, season 4 has 2 episodes. So they bring a new suspect in each time. And the first suspect of the first episode of this is David Tennant, who is, and yeah, we come back to him. He's a doctor accused of raping and murdering his stepdaughter. Tennant is wonderful in the role. You also get people like Hayley Atwell appearing on this. She was, for those that are into this sort of thing, she was the love interest of Captain America in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Mm-hmm. She plays the young woman from way back. She's the one that he carries the photo around with him all the time. First episode of the second season, the actor playing the suspect is Kit Harington, accused of rape. Kit Harington played Jon Snow in Game of Thrones. And there's also Kunal Nayar, who was in The Big Bang Theory. He also plays a very interesting part. Now, the interesting thing about the criminal one, if I haven't mentioned on the podcast before, is that they use the same set in a sort of a pan-European style, exactly the same set for Criminal UK, Criminal France, Criminal Germany and Criminal Spain. The France stuff is okay and interesting. Spain, didn't like it all. And the German stuff I gave as one of my honourable mentions because that was good. Interesting that with the French and the German and the Spanish, they all have crimes that are very specific for their country. So one of the German ones is about, relates all the way right back to the fall of the Berlin Wall. So that's interesting. The other honourable mention I'll give is to Bosch Season 5 and 6 on Netflix. Hieronymus Bosch is the name of the detective in a large 20-odd books, a series by Michael Connelly that our friend Kerry Hanfield's a big fan of,
I like the books, yeah.
Yeah, I can recommend. I didn't know whether you'd read them all, but I read some of them.
Oh, yeah, I haven't read them all. I gave up a while ago because there's so many of them.
There's just so many of them. I haven't read them all. I've read about 14 or 15. I'm a long way behind. I've got to catch up, but they are always quite good.
Are they on Netflix or is it Amazon Prime?
That's on, Posh is on Netflix.
Oh, okay. Oh, I thought it was Amazon Prime. Never mind.
Well, maybe. I can't necessarily tell you I've got all of these right, but anyway, it doesn't matter. It's on Netflix or Enterprise Prime, one of those.
Doesn't matter. Some people can find it anyway. People can find it, yeah.
I only watched a couple of horror TV shows this year. The only one that I want to talk about is The Outsider, which I've already talked about on the podcast. This is a 10-episode miniseries on Netflix based on the Stephen King novel of the same name. The Australian actor Ben Mendelsohn seems to be one of the executive producers behind this and has a starring role in the chief of police in a small town who has to investigate the gruesome murder of a young boy, seemingly by a very, very popular school teacher, until he finds out that the school teacher was nowhere in town at the time, and yet three or four people specifically know who he is and identified him coming away from the scene of the murder covered in blood. It's very interesting. It also includes the character of Holly Gibney that Stephen King seems to be very interested in as a continuing character through a few of his books. She appeared in all of the Mr. Mercedes 3 seasons of the TV series, although this is a different actor playing the role in this part. But The Outsider is worth watching if you're interested in horror. Science fiction, yes. I actually do watch some science fiction during the year, but I've only got 4 that I want to name, and I only watch 6. So this is the problem, trying to sneak it in after hours. And, you know, I'm getting old. I need to go to bed early, David. It's a bit tough. So the first one, it's our podcast. We can do what we like, sure. Right? So what I've done is, in some of the other ones, I've put the two seasons together. And this time I've had one program where I've split 2 seasons. And I'll explain why.
Okay.
First one, I'm only going to give 4, top 4. Umbrella Academy on Netflix, 10 episode, based on the Dark Horse comic book series of the same name. It's not really a superhero subgenre, but it's sort of like there's a group of people that are all young children that are all born on exactly the same day to women that were, well, virgins, never pregnant, basically, until that day. And then, bang, they give birth that day. Seven of them are basically brought together under the auspices of one particular person who realises they all have sort of special powers in some way or another. If you like quirky superhero stuff, this is pretty good, and I enjoyed this. But this is a bit slower, the first season. It's a bit of a setup. So number three, For All Mankind Season 1, which you discussed about Apple TV. I won't talk about that too much, about 10 episodes. I'm looking forward to the second season of this. I've been telling people that they should see it if they like science fiction. It's a different view of science fiction that you don't normally see being done by major studios or major organisations, because it's a bit quirky. Number two, Umbrella Academy Season 2. Season 1 was the big setup. Season 2 is the payoff. And there's some wonderful stuff in this, but some people have told me it just gets out of control. Yeah, it just about does, but then they pull it all back together again. And I like the way it all sort of... It looks like it's just about to explode, and then in it comes, and it all sort of fits, and you go, oh, okay. And then they jump to something else, and you think, oh, God, they better have a season three, because I need to be able to watch what happens with this. I like this. I like this a lot, and I thought that it certainly is going to warrant another season to carry on with. And number one, The Expanse Season 4. I know that you said that you liked a lot more of The Expanse when it's set in space. Yeah, I have a tendency to agree with that. But I basically... I like this. I thought this was the first one that they did with Amazon. So I think they were basically still trying to get things together, or was it already done?
No, I think season three, that might have been the one they first did. Oh, at least certainly Amazon released season three. Might have been done.
Well, Amazon released this one. So basically it's over there. The production values are really high. The scripting's great. The actors are good. We've discussed this. This is probably one of the best series of science fiction novels being done at the moment. If you like inter-solar system space opera to a degree, this is a good representation of it, and they've done very, very well. People are now saying, if you want to watch something, this is the one to watch.
Sure.
Now, other things that I also like, which I didn't have enough to fit into particular categories, Freeman, which was a one-episode, one-hour documentary on the ABC. And it's a documentary covering Kathy Freeman's race for the 400 metres in the 2000 Sydney Olympics. So it covers the lead-up, the race, and the aftermath. And this is a wonderful portrayal of people under pressure and what they have to do and what they have to go through to get from sort of obscurity up to right to the very pinnacle. What they have to do when they're there to maintain it, and what happens to them a bit afterwards. Wonderful stuff. Really well done, and I really enjoyed this. I think it was shown on ABC TV during the year. It is probably on their rewind still, and I'd recommend watching it. Another one, I'm not putting these in order, there's just another one, The Test, which is a new era for the Australian cricket team. This is on Amazon, eight episodes. A lot of people would say, why do I want to watch this? It's about cricket and I hate cricket. Well, I look at this as being a bit like the film Moneyball that people watched even though they hated baseball. That is a film ostensibly about baseball, but it's not. It's about man management and getting the best out of people and interactions when you have to work in a team. And so is this. This is an insider view of how the Australian cricket team came back from the infamous ball tampering scandal in South Africa in 2018, coming back to retain the Ashes in England and the pressures they had to go through. And you get right down inside the change rooms and you see what happens when they win, you see what happens when they lose, you see what happens when people kick things because they're angry and then have to go and pick everything up and put everything away. And it's interesting watching people under that much extreme stress being able to get through the other end and see what happens. It's not going to be to everybody's liking, but I loved it. I just ate this up because I'm a big cricket nufty, so that's it. Another one, the last one I'll talk about before I go into my top of the year, is The Queen's Gambit. This is the big one for the year on Netflix. It's coming of age drama, miniseries of 7 episodes based on the novel of the same name by Walter Tevis, who wrote The Hustler and The Man Who Fell to Earth.
Oh, I've forgotten you also wrote The Hustler. Yeah, he was an amazing writer.
Yeah, well, so he wrote The Hustler and The Colour of Money, which was a sequel. Mm. Both of those were made into films, both starring Paul Newman as Fast Eddie. The first one, The Hustler, has Jackie Gleason playing the magnificently named Minnesota Fats,
yes.
who's a pool hustler. Fantastic.
Yeah,
film.
That is good.
Absolutely wonderful. Again, it does not matter if you like pool. That's not the point. And the same thing about this one. This one's ostensibly about chess, and I've told people about this before. I sort of got onto this because I recognised it. I thought, I wonder what this is. Well, I went and had a look at it. And I started to tell people about it. I don't like chess, people would say. It's not about chess.
No.
Well, it is, but it's not.
No.
You can watch it and you won't be fussed about the fact that it's about chess. And so people go away, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So they go away and watch it. And they come back and say, that's fantastic. Yeah, yeah. And it's a coming of age following this young girl who's orphaned at a very early age. She goes from her first introduction of about the age of nine to introduction of the game of chess at the age of nine on to later taking on the Russian world champion in Moscow, wins the US Open Championship at 16. It's a character study of an outstanding talent under a hell of a lot of pressure and stress, based loosely on the life of Bobby Fischer, but with a gender change. So that adds a whole lot of extra frisson to the story. It gives it a huge kick. The setting is wonderful. The actress playing the lead role, Anna Taylor-Joy, is fantastic.
Okay.
Absolutely fantastic. Can't take her eyes off her, basically. She's just wonderful. And all it all works. The whole lot just all works. And if you're going to watch one during the year, I reckon that.
Yeah,
be
well, I definitely want to watch that, but I haven't yet had the chance. I did read the book decades ago and enjoyed the book, but yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, well, I've got the book somewhere in the house, but it's one of those ones that it's in here somewhere, and I don't know where it is. I know it is. I found a couple of the others of his, but I saw The Hustler the other day, but I can't find what I've done with that one. It's gone somewhere, but I know I've read it. A long time ago, so that's why I was recognising it, but I would recommend it. So the best TV of the year, well, you probably know now where I'm going to get to with number one, but anyway, I'll lead down through the list. Number five, Trapped, season one and two. That's the Icelandic detective series, which I recommend all of these, by the way. Number four, The Test, about the cricket team. I'm quite willing to admit it's probably got a lot more interest for me as a cricket fan than it does for people that are not cricket fans.
Like me.
Like you. But can I recommend you watch the first episode and just see how that goes. See how somebody has to start to take a team which is at rock bottom, absolutely rock bottom. Captain's been sacked. Two best players have been put out for a year. The coach resigns. And a new coach has to come in and build the team up from absolutely nothing all the way right through. Excellent stuff. Number three, Criminal UK, season one and two. I really like this anthology series. I mean, when I say that there's an interrogation room, the same set, there's an interrogation room, there's a monitoring room, and then there's the room outside where it's got the lifts and the doorway coming in. The interrogation room is not one where they basically get the rubber hoses out and beat the bejesus out of somebody. They just basically sit somebody down by a table with their lawyer and it's a discussion. The scripts have got to be really tight on something like that because there's no... You can't have any special effects floating around to smooth over around the edges and you can't sort of wave your hands and go, oh, everything will be okay. It's got to be spot on the mark. So these are one-act plays that are done beautifully and it's a really lovely concept. Number two, The Expanse Season 4. We've discussed that a fair bit, so you can understand why I really quite like that. And number one, of course, is Queen's Gambit, which I gave 4.7 out of 5 to. If you are going to watch one thing this year, I would heartily recommend you watch The Queen's Gambit. It's basically had massive amounts of coverage in the press all over the place. And I've just read today, David, which you will be happy to hear, that the producer of The Queen's Gambit has got his next project in mind.
Yes.
And it is based on the science fiction film The Sparrow.
Ah, yes, yes.
So you know more about that book than I do.
Mary Doria Russell. Yeah.
Yes, because you've read that. And the sequel?
I have read the sequel, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, that's a harrowing, harrowing book. So it'll be interesting to see how they deal with it on the TV series.
Well, it will be. And it'll be good to... Yeah, it'll be good to have a look and see what happens. I have yet to read that, so that will have to be one that I do during the year at some point or other. But I don't know when I'm going to get to it. My honourable mentions to Freeman, the Kathy Freeman documentary, The Alienist Season 1, Des with David Tennant, Criminal Germany season 1. Hopefully there'll be a second season of that. There's only so far of that whole batch of four, there's only been a second season of the UK one, probably all stymied by the coronavirus pandemic, so nobody's able to travel anywhere, so they haven't been able to do it. And my last honourable mention to Giri Haji, which is another one that I would recommend I recommend you watch. Very well done. So that's me for the year.
Indeed.
For the whole lot. I was, as I said earlier, I was quite astounded.
Mm.
That I had watched so much. Maybe it was a product of having all that spare time because of the pandemic. You couldn't go out anywhere. And after a while, you basically think, you know, I'll just watch something because whatever's on there. And then you get interested, so you start watching it all the way through. And there are some that I watched that I know that I started that I didn't finish, which I really feel as though I should go back to. Succession, the TV series which is sort of loosely based on the Murdoch dynasty, is one that I've heard very good things about. I watched the first half of the first season, but what I've heard is that it hits a flat patch about that period.
Right.
And people are saying you have to push your way through that to get to the end of the first season, and then when it gets to the second, it really takes off. So, and I think there's only two, but they're working on a third season or have one in the can. So I'd better catch up on that. And, you know, there's all sorts of stuff floating around. When you go digging into the different streaming platforms that are out there, I'm lucky in that I have two children that are working that have bought family subscriptions to them for about $8, $10 a week. So each one of those has got one. And so I've got another one, and that basically covers a lot of them.
Yeah.
So that way it works out really quite well. And I'm able to piggyback on theirs and they piggyback on mine. All legally done, of course, because you're allowed to have two or three people watching things. And it there's a massive amount of stuff out there.
It really is
a golden age of television. And look, if the Queen's Gambit's anything to go on, and they're willing to do that amount of work. Although I gather the producer took 20 years to get it made.
The producer
and the agent would not allow it to be stymied, to be changed, to be messed about. And what they've come out with is going to win awards like it's going out of style this year, I would reckon. It's just going to win everything.
Terrific. Mm. Yeah, I've heard very good things about it, and obviously now I've heard a good deal more.
Mm. Yep. And that's me. I'm done. Finally,
David. Well done. Well, I'm hoping to watch a little more TV next year. We've changed things a little, so I can watch a little bit more. But we'll see. All right. I think that's probably done. That's done for the episode. We've up to an hour now. Yep.
I think it is. I think we're pretty much through it all. So next week.
Yes.
Next fortnight.
Yes.
In a fortnight's time. We'll be back in a fortnight's time, not a week's time. We're not going to fall into the trap of going on weeklies anymore. I mean, fortnight's quite the schedule that I like.
Yeah,
I was actually said to my wife today as well, I was setting up for this, and I said, I really am glad I'm not doing it every week. Mm. I mean, this would end up starting to become a full-time job, and you wouldn't be able to do the other bits. And you'd always be scrambling, and I think you would lose interest very quickly if we were doing it that regularly. So we'll be back in a fortnight's time, and we'll just be talking about books that we've been reading lately, because we've had a bit of a break, and what we're doing. Some of the reading I've been doing over the last couple of weeks has been for episodes of the podcast that will be coming up later in the year, so doing some pre-reading for it, because some of these things you have to read 4, 5, and 6 books for. So you don't want to... I'm not one of these ones, as I've said in the past, where I like to read 5 or 6 books by an author. I just like to spread them apart just a little bit. give it a bit of a gap.
Indeed.
All right, David.
Okay.
I think we're done.
We are indeed. Right. So we'll see you all in a fortnight's time.
See you then.
See you then.
Bye.
Okay, bye.